existential consciousness, and Martyr kind of reversed that into non-conscious intentionality. It's kind of hard.
There is this, in this thematizing itself, in becoming conscious of itself, never leaves itself behind. And this is the source of Husserl's theoreticism. And I don't know, was there something?
Yeah, I'm trying. I think it's that, Husserl, who's like a philosopher, thought that being conscious, it needs to be, you need to be directing something to be conscious. I think Martyr is kind of just trying to maybe make the point as well that you can be conscious, or I don't know, it's something about it doesn't have to be directional or intentional for it to be, I think, as well.
I'm jumping a little bit further. There's the page 126. Mm-hmm. There was the sentence in the beginning. Since life and consciousness are subsets of invention of creative activity, the non-conscious life of plants is a kind of thinking before thinking, an inventiveness independent from instinctual adaption and from formal intelligence alike. I don't know. There was something interesting about the thinking before thinking, because mm-hmm. it's not actually thinking what plants are doing, but the thinking is in their body.
Yeah, and it's not kind of just reactive as well. It's because if it was just reactive or kind of inbuilt in them, then they wouldn't be able to kind of keep changing to different environments constantly, and I don't know that they're able to kind of keep taking in new things. So it's not just kind of reflective, I guess.
Yeah, this psychoanalysis confirms that memory fragments are often unavailable to the human psyche in the shape of conscious representations. And he's talking about the trauma and how the trauma affects our brains and how our brains functions. And so plant thinking attends to the existence of non-conscious. Somehow, and
yeah, and that that their memory is kind of Nietzsche said that it's kind of imageless and non-representational, so it's not something that we can kind of imagine, but it's still sensory, I guess. And that memory has nothing to do with nerves or brain. It's a primal quality.
They've been testing it with that plant called mimosa. And mimosa is this kind of plant that shuts down?
Yeah, it kind of reacts, closes to...
when you touch it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was the thing you already said about memory. There is another page, in the second page, in 127. There is this sentence that whereas humans remember whatever has phenomenally appeared in the light, plants keep the memory of light itself. I think that was also very interesting, that about how we perceive world by just how the life just reflects from the objects we perceive, and plants perceive the light itself.
Yeah. So
they are kind of, they are perceiving, but in different waves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There is so much things.
I know, yeah. Hard to choose.
There is this magnetism also in the next page.
Yes.
I don't know, was there something about the sensibility?
Yeah, so it's, yeah. What was this? Will I just read out that quote maybe? So there's this quote kind of about like magnetism. So it's, magnetism is as universal in universal nature as sensibility in an organic nature, which also belongs to plants. Sensibility in them passes into irritability, where the higher factor of sensibility, the brain, gradually disappears, and the lower gradually attains preponderance. Sensibility also begins to fade into irritability. So it's kind of just about trauma, I guess, again. Mm. Like that kind of, that's what they kind of maybe react to.
Yeah. Oh my God. I think in wider perspective, not in any specific place, but I was wondering about, because there is the Aristotelic text apart also about spirits and like human, when we are thinking about consciousness, we are thinking about spirit also, or is that really change after all, the thinking?
Yeah. Or like if the two are kind of like related together,
but it haven't gone or disappeared anywhere, the talk about spirit, if we are trying to kind of get rid of that.
Yes.
But kind of.
Yeah, but is it kind of.
And there is also this, if dynamic extension is at the core of vegetal intentionality, growth being understood as
page are we?
129.
In the last paragraph.
Growth being understood as extended intentionality, then recent philosophies of the body should resonate with plant thinking. And indeed, Maurice Merleau-Ponty's reflective intentionality of corporeity, or the language of the body, shares various feathers with that of plants.
Mm-hmm. So like our body is the same in the sense that it also has kind of reflective or innate kind of things that we just do without maybe consciously thinking about them or something. So it's also trying to link that together.
Mm. There is also, for instance, in the minute movements of muscles restricted to the peripheral nervous system that make up the act of raising one's hand. And also, this is from somewhere else, but I was reading earlier the book from Daniel Dennett's Kinds of Minds, and from that book he claims, or kind of tried to explain what kind of is plant's mind or somehow, and he said that it's kind of a similar than a human's nervous system. So I think that's kind of the same, or tries to explain the plant mind somehow.
Yeah, and with the grass as well. What were you saying earlier about that?
Oh yeah, and then this.
Does it explain, because when we have this nervous system, we put out, you know, signals, so what is the kind of...
What signals?
If I want to raise my hand, my brain puts a signal to my nervous system and my muscles.
So yeah, something, but what is the I or it that starts that happening? I think that's the question that we're trying to solve.
Well, sometimes it happens without the decision.
Yeah.
But you get blinded by the sun.
And also in like 1800s, Darwin made this plant scientific tests, and he was growing some grass and showed them the blue light, and he discovered that it turns toward the light. And then he made this test that he puts a little kind of hat or something on the top of the grass, and then it didn't bend. So that there was something to show that the plant has on the top of, or the grass has on the top of it, some kind of sensor. So it kind of had a head also. Not a head, but
roughly
kind of.
Can you say again at the beginning? So why did he
He was
what?
Just experimenting like that. He was growing the plant, and then he showed it like blue light just to see if it bends or if it has some kind of perception to perceive light where it's moving.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, we had the same text today also come into the discussion.
Yeah, sure.
I'm a bit confused, like, because we read the same text, so I don't know. But with that, what you were talking about, I was thinking about the potatoes, that this was in the text before there, about with Hegel.
Which basis?
Is 128.
128,
In the middle.
Yeah.
That's
here.
These potatoes sprouting in the cellar.
Mm-hmm.
That the sprouts climb up the wall as if they knew the way in order to reach the opening where they could enjoy the light.
That's super interesting.
Yeah, and I thought, like, and they do that in the dark also, but then it's this. There, like, start to talk about this if it's knowledge or the. But I was thinking of, like, that we know how to breathe, but we cannot decide not to breathe. So it's like that, of if the circumstances are good for the potato to sprout, it will do it, and if we manage to breathe, we will do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so,
I like how to mix, why to mix it with knowing somehow, it's just, well, intuitive. Yeah, intuitive. Yeah.
It's like a built-in intelligence.
Something you have to do without choice.
Yeah, like it's not a,
I think that's what they use as well, but with sensibility, so it's like it's not conscious but it's sensible or something. I don't know.
Yeah, like make a mimosa.
Yeah.
Reacting to
touch
or
the
sensing.
But also like the ability to change as well, like according to the environment.
Have you seen this short documentary, The Secret Life of Plants or whatever?
Yeah.
So I like that experiment. It was putting a plant in one room and then in another room he would boil some shrimps or something, and I think you were in that course.
Yeah.
And then the plant reacted to the shrimp's misery in a
way.
It just kind of, I don't know, it just sensed probably somehow.
Yeah, he claimed
that. For example,
that because
all my plants, they died last year because I was going through a stress and it absorbs the. No, is it too silly? I don't know, I think it's fascinating because it's not, I don't think it's just primary, primal instincts or intelligence, it must be something.
Yeah, there was a name he put it, kind of primal perception or something. It's kind of, but it was already 60s he discovered this. Whatever it is then.
What's the name? Secret Life of Plants?
Mm. You can find it in YouTube. Yes.
I don't know. I'm just scrolling.
What is that about this the plant's non-intentionality? Is on the 125 there, it is talking about
125.
That it's...
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. That it crucially differs from the of ethical subjectivity, the plant's non-intentionality.
Oh yeah, so it's kind of referring to plants that like they kind of exude this kind of pure immanence. I don't know. I'm not completely sure. First,
what page is this?
This is 125 from the second last paragraph at the start.
Can you say
if
But if you had a direction to continue with the, I'm just jumping back on this thing, maybe it's better that you
no,
go and I will, if I, there's something I can, because you were now on the page, actually on the page 129.
Yeah, I'm just not really sure if I know, like, even how to explain that myself, but like, it's an interesting kind of thing to try and figure out, I guess, yeah.
It's good.
Can I say one more thing? With on the page 129, there was this about roots that are similar with to the potato. I think I can just read that chapter there.
Which chapter?
The second, but the analogy also has its inherent limits. The international intentionality of the plant is not unidirectional, given that the roots too seek nutrition, navigating a variable environmental maze, sensing humidity, radiance of the soil, and avoiding movement in the direction of the nearby roots. And there is this that I heard of, was in London that they planned this, or in England, this railways with the help of some mushroom systems that seek the most clever ways, or so they can use that as kind of a thinking of the ways which, and they also make the shortcuts, like if that best passage somehow is blocked or something, then this mushroom also makes the like the best second solution for that also, and that can be used in the railway situation if there's a traffic or accident or something.
Yeah, I also think it's like interesting as well looking at it and maybe like more as a dialogue between obviously the plant and then its environment and how like together they kind of find solutions or like even like say like with the wind, like how, like, I don't know, like the plant is almost talking back to the wind, or it's somehow, I don't know if that makes sense, but
yeah.
But it's like the two in combination with each other.
Yeah. You like this, though? Yeah, bordering.
Mm-hmm.
Where it ends and all that.
Yeah.
Being of the plant.
We start the non-identity thinking. I think it's it's about also like we have this individualistic thinking, or our system is very individualistic. So I don't know, is it something that
that it's very like human to be individual, I suppose. This is kind of opposed to that, maybe.
Sorry, what page are we on?
131 is the start, the very end.
What is
non-identity thinking.
There is this Nietzsche writes, to the plants, all things are usually in response, eternal, everything identical with itself. It is from the period of the lower organisms that man has inherited the belief that there are identical things. I don't know, is there something? It may even be that the original belief of everything organic was from the very beginning that all the rest of the world is one and unmoving. On Nietzsche's view, then humans in the state of response and non-sensation are temporarily indifferent to the world and notice to alteration in it, but the plants are permanently unperturbed, how to say unperturbed, existing as if their environment were unaltered and eternal. Yeah, there's the same what you were talking about, the environment.
Yeah.
Also.
But maybe also kind of like the idea of kind of like art thing of time and space as well, maybe, I don't know, and how, yeah, I don't know.
Well, I'm just going to read something from here, what I've been underlined. So, if the logical belief in identical or self-identical things really stems from the prehistory of the human, then one must search for its source in what preceded vegetation, that is, in the inflexible inorganic world of minerals, where too this belief would not be entirely justified. There was also somewhere this this minerals, where was the talks about minerals, do you remember? There's something, this kind of belief that it was this the base for everything. Crystal. If the plant is a kind of a living crystal, then in its being, as well as in its thinking, it enlivens the pre-organic heritage, putting in motion, which is to say, deformalizing, undoing, or deconstituting the inflexible old schemas. I don't know, was there already in the beginning about the crystal? Crystal thinks.
Thinking in primitive conditions is the crystallization of forms, as in the case of crystal. Previous paragraph.
I think that was interesting.
Sure. So it's kind of like the coming of together of things, or like, I think, I don't know.
It's hard to follow here. Is it 1, 3, 2?
1, 3, 3.
1, 3, 3, okay.
We should.
No, it's fine. I'm finding it hard to follow.
Yeah, this text is about mostly like how to see the world and all the putting together these philosophers who were thinking about consciousness and how to define world and conscious mind. And so there is like, I think there are just so many things that he is putting together and so many perspectives to think about world. So this is, that's why this is a little bit confusing.
Yeah. But the whole like area of consciousness as well is just confusing in general, like where the line is. And
So should we pick something interesting to discuss, or do you find it interesting to go through the whole text first, or
I don't know, maybe I could just like, there is like few sentences that I would maybe like to pick up. That is something that there was something interesting, maybe. This is from the page 134. It's about in the middle. And there was discussion about this like vegetable-like person. If to think about plants. Like, as persons. To be fair, a vegetable-like person is not one who no longer thinks, but in more nuanced formulation, one who thinks without following the perceptions of formal logic and therefore, in some sense, without thinking. I don't know, that was... Let us then try to get accustomed to the idea that thinking is not the sole prerogative of the subject or of the human being, and that aside from altering the form of thought, which blah 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 blah, I don't know, say something, but about the thinking, like what is thinking and what is thought.
Yeah, and what is like non-identical thinking, because that's also kind of it's an interesting concept as well.
Yes.
And I think that's what he's trying to get across in that maybe, is the kind of like non-identical thinking.
About I think, or it thinks. Or, but who or what is the it that thinks? Yeah, that's the question. Well, on the next page is Bergson. Bergson, he has this idea of the life that thinks. So he claimed that I think is dead and it thinks also, but then there is like this only life that thinks. The living thinking of life is appropriate in each case to the relation of a given organism to its milieu.
As a single unit, it is not the same thing that is appropriate to the integrated thinking of a human being and its life world, those due to the role of plant soul in making a shared life possible, one may expect certain overlaps between two kinds of intellection. I don't know, whenever I think about it, it's kind of like we're the odd ones out that we don't kind of go with natural rhythms or something, or that we're constantly fighting against it as human beings. I don't know.
Well then, do you have something? There was the Pascal, in the page 137. I underlined this. Man is a reed, but the weakest in nature. But he is a thinking reed, and that is also something to. So the thinking of this reed is precisely what makes it weak. Emasculates its integral connection to the environment, prompts it to harm itself and the surrounding world. So that's kind of paradox about thinking.
That rather has kind of a positive, kind of maybe
not so much. Or I don't know.
The vegetal, it thinks, does not answer the question who or what does the thinking, but when and where does thinking happen? Because this thinking, inseparable from the place of its germination, arises from the returns to the plant's embeddedness in its environment.
I don't know, maybe we just keep does anyone like have something that they like want to discuss further from the text or like a concept? That
well, maybe the thinking, there was this question where and when thinking happens in plants and how it is non-hierarchical. Thinking, like a field of grass, there's no head, or no parts that decide everything for everyone else,
Is it that the ego is, does the ego reside in the head, and then there's no ego?
There is no identity itself, or conscious actor. And then with that there was this continuity in existence, like there's no identity that thinks in time that now is my time to grow, live and die, but just exist without time. That's the plant way of existing.
But the plants know time. They also make decisions and they decide based on certain conditions and like growing conditions and weather and timing very much what to do at different times. They drop their seeds at a certain time. They come out of the soil at a certain time.
Yeah. Yeah, there was something about that. There was these both sides, but what was the other? Do you remember this part of the text?
Is it maybe that they're not like I suppose maybe like conscious of time? Maybe is that what you're referring to when you say when you're talking about time? That they don't know time and that they live eternally. It's more so
yeah.
that I don't know. I'm not sure.
Is it the non-conscious intentionality that the first chapter is about?
Mm.
That it's not... they know that they react to certain circumstances in the surrounding, but they don't, in that sense, have the time as humans that they would have the memory or the future plan, or the identity that would say that now I do this and then I quit, or but this is just a reaction. Like, there was about this memory also in page 126, and where in the middle there are, in the middle of the second chapter, that to say that vegetal beings possess memory is to claim that they have a past which they bear in their extended being and which they may access at any given moment, or more simply, it is to assert that they are temporal beings through and through. And what you also said about Nietzsche's imageless picture, like non-representational.
Yeah.
That the mimosa with... that we find memory but no consciousness. So yeah, it's about the word and what you...
I think maybe it's a different type of like memory than like... I don't know.
Unconscious.
Yeah.
It's not a memory that we can understand. It's a different kind of memory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They cannot give a presentation of the memory anyway. But the question is also, can we, like, how far? Yeah, of course, we carry a lot of memories that we are not able to put in words or something. That is the bodily memory or something.
Yeah, I was thinking about this continuity with the plant existence, like in comparison to humans. That there's each phase is somehow equal, and it's the seed and the sprout and the plant and the other plants that come after. It's the existence of the same plant in a way. Not that at one point there would be plant thinking that now is my time to exist and then it's over, but the seeds that come after the plants and their offspring later, they are all the same plant in a way, existing the same plant life.
I'm sure.
No.
But how isn't human life the same human life?
Like when we live through life, it's easy to think that we disappear at some point and not think that our offspring after 1,000 years are the same.
Oh, okay.
Same as us. We could be so wide.
But I think it's like somehow, because there could be like these memories that are not, like we could have memories that are not our memories, but are the memories of our ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
So sort of that's the way.
That is from that movie. Mm-hmm.
Is it from the same movie? No, this was from Transparent. So.
No, I was thinking about, what was it? I don't remember the
name of that movie.
But it was this movie where there was this researchers who
was it about bunnies?
No.
Okay.
And they could identify based on the human eyes what was his or her past, and they had the same memories as the former.
Yeah.
No, past life. Yeah, there is this theory that everybody has the memory in their body of their ancestors, particular ancestors. Mm. That's why there are these DNA tests and so on.
But additionally, we also have our individual, which yeah. I suppose plants don't have.
Is that
but what
the difference then? I was thinking this, like what makes a human, and is there a human is born without a brain? And the parents love this. What is like? It's a really simple organism than like just a simple
tulonsuojelusjärjestelmä.
I don't know.
Metabolism.
Yeah. Like no brain, and that is a living creature. I mean, there is emotions involved from the surrounding to this. And also that we also carry. Organisms and this that we don't understand and we don't know about in ourselves as the plant, but I mean, yeah.
But I was thinking,
yeah.
In what ways? Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
In what ways is like our memory individual? Because it's like where does it start to be individual if it's in relation to like everything around us all the time?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell about this bunny experiment. It was like they were. I think there was some sort of a flower or something that they exposed the plant to, and then at the same time like made them feel pain in some way. And then the bunny's offspring, when they smelled this same flower, they got this really bad stress reaction from the flower because
mm-hmm.
they. Parents have experienced.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
But I guess it's just survival instinct, isn't it? Or don't we have that too? Now they're talking about we're not gonna be afraid of snakes or these kind of.
Or flowers that are gonna eat us.
Yeah,
right.
In the future we're gonna be afraid of sharks who appeared on TV. Kidding, example.
No, but that's
yeah. It's
yeah.
Interesting. Did you know when a mouse smells a cat pee, it doesn't get afraid anymore of the cat, because
mm-hmm.
the cat's urine extracts this kind of chemical which goes to your brain where you don't fear of death.
Can you say it again? What?
Like when a cat urinates, so it could, you know, catch easily. I don't know what it does, but anyhow, when the mouse smells the cat's urine,
oh,
so
yeah.
it doesn't get afraid of the cat. The cat can come as close as it can because it extracts these kind of chemicals into your brain where you don't get afraid.
So hopefully the mouse will smell the pee for it.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know if it's reliable on this fact that when people have cats, and I'm a dog lover, so when people have cats and if they smell urine, they will have more thoughts of they will have more suicidal thoughts. And it even can trigger schizophrenia.
Really?
But I'm not really sure if this is a reliable fact. I just saw it in a
this
my documentary.
You just saw it in
YouTube.
Lovers blog.
Yeah. Fun 101 facts, you know. Should we have a break, by the way?
What do you think about this? This if plants have domesticated us to take care of them?
Yeah, that's interesting.
That's
I've been thinking
dog.
About it.
Or has the dog domesticated me?
But as we have started farming the plants, it's like taking good care of them. Or not.
it's also the thought that it's like war, having a garden, you need a life use of power. Yeah. So.
Yeah, they've been existing for so long. We've been existing like so little time, so.
Yeah.
They are much more wiser than we are. Maybe we don't understand anything.
Yeah. There was one bit, like, about, like, this was in the other text, but when they were talking about, like, the Amazon, they were talking about it as kind of, like, this thing that was just uncontrollable, and, but also the kind of idea that, like, humans wanted to domesticate, like, that Amazon or something. There was one bit, I forget where it was, but that they couldn't or something, and that it was like a sovereign nature and that kind of idea, and that we were like intruders almost or something. No, but that was just it.
About this murder?
Yeah.
Last sentence from the
yeah.
One. So do you want to read it?
Or we just read the last part.
Last page, maybe?
Not so conscious.
Okay. If plant thinking is to avoid being caught in the trap of the preceding metaphysical strategies that selectively inherited and at the same time violated vegetal life, it must be receptive to and appreciative of this life's other pole, the pole of darkness with the possibilities to proper to it. In the words of Lev Shestov, it seems that very soon human beings will feel the same little understood but caring force which has thrown us into the world and taught us, like the plants, to tend toward the light, gradually readying us for a free life, is prodding us towards a new sphere where a new life with its own riches awaits us. And perhaps in the not too distant future, an inspired poet will courageously and joyfully exclaim, "Let the sun disappear and let there be darkness." Plant thinking is obliged to undersign the desire of Shestov's inspired poet to the extent that it reconnects with the unconscious roots, all the while refraining from the indiscriminate repudiation of life. To live and to think in and from the middle, like plant partaking to light of light and of darkness, it is not to be confined to the dialectical twilight where philosophy paints its grey on grey. It is rather to refashion oneself, one's thought and one's existence into a bridge between divergent elements, to become a place where the sky communes with the earth and light encounters but does not dispel darkness.
Yes.
a nice ending.
Yeah, yes. I really love that.
Poetic.
There's so many things that I don't know.
Mm.
But I think we got the points. But there are many points more. But
you can't see. It's with the text that big as well. Like you actually physically can't go on every point.
Yeah.
If you don't do every point, then because they all fit together.
Mm.
And then at the end, you're reading each other.
Yeah.
Okay. It's kind of hard to summarize.
I've never been good at summarizing.
This one was like. Because I've been reading about Merleau-Ponty's text about perception. It was so great when there was this. There was a little bit about him also.
Yes.
I would like to.